Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Here with Michael Hebert, VP of Product Strategy at Malazai, a Finastra company. And Michael, you know, you're an interesting character to bring onto the show because you're equal parts banker and technologist in what you do, right? And you know, you could say you're fintechy, but you also work for a large financial service firm, you know, that has, you know, deep roots, but acts more like a startup does these days. Which came first, the chicken or the egg of Michael the technologist or Michael the banker-oriented person?
Well, first, Jason, thanks for having me. And to answer that question, it was the banker. It's what really started my career, being a banker, servicing small businesses. And not to date myself, these were the days of going out to the local YMCA and to their accounting department with floppy disks to install cash management solutions. So yeah, definitely started as a banker. I had gone to the dark side and worked for the vendor, loved it. And my path has taken me here since then.
So what took you to the dark side of working with a vendor, you know, in the first place? What was the appeal there to go on the tech side?
Honestly, I think I was just a very annoying, loud customer. The vendor that provided that cash management solution, to me as a banker, being the one that had to be on the front line working with the businesses, wasn't quite understanding what these businesses needed. So I was quite vocal. So finally, that vendor had asked me to come work for them to solve the problems that I was raising for them.
So they decided rather than solving the squeaky wheel, they would just hire the squeaky wheel, and that's how they would silence you.
Exactly.
Oh, and so, you know, with the squeaky wheel and what you've done, you know, banks and the tech providers, you know, that serve them historically have been very product-led, e.g., we build a product and we push it out to the customer. And while your title is product strategy, you're very much a customer-driven, right? Which is very different. Now, how have you approached this? Because, you know, we're talking about small businesses, and small businesses are the lifeblood of really the U.S. and the global economy, you know, that they make up, you know, according to the SBA, that small businesses account for 99% of all business activity across the U.S., right? And they define it as, you know, a company that has less than 500 employees. Why don't we start with, when you talk about small business, how do you define small business? Because number of employees doesn't always seem like the right way to frame it. So I'd love your thoughts on first, how do we define them? And then how did you get into their heads about what their needs were?
Yeah, you know, it is a hard question to answer. And how I've answered it in the past and how I'll answer it today is that it really depends on the needs of that business. You know, a small, like I see it a lot today, even a small business is really looking more and more like a large business, a large corporate client that's got global partners. So really there's a gray line, which continues to shift on, could be assets, it could be number of employees, but to me, it comes down to the needs of the customer. I think where that gray line is the more global they are, the more global trade they need is what draws that line from being a small business customer using a digital banking solution to a large corporation that requires a more complex, sophisticated cash management product.
So you brought up cash management. Where do you see that being broken for most of SMB? You know, is that really, if you think about what you've been building out, is that the anchor you'd say in terms of a need in the market?
It is. It is. The small business market that I've served over the years, you know, have got some sophisticated needs. I've spent a career teaching them NACHA rules, Fedwire specifications, EDI, BAI reporting. and admit that was the wrong approach. This time around, you know, these small business, though they may need these functions or features, they really want a solution that is not unlike their own consumer product. I mean, these people are also using a consumer internet banking solution, right? They're going in, opening up personal accounts, managing those personal accounts. There's no reason why they shouldn't be able to do the same functions for their business accounts in a business banking product.
Well, I think one of the keys there, on the retail side, their consumer accounts have gotten a lot more intuitive, not to mention a lot prettier in how they do things and, you know, the level of detail that they can see and the way they manipulate things. And if you look in your average, you know, small business banking platform, it's pretty limited in what you can do and pretty clunky. It's almost like the scaled down kind of corporate, which is all well and good if you're sophisticated enough to know what EDI, BAI is. You know, right. Funny side story on that. I was talking to a banker who was out meeting with a small business and was trying to sell them treasury management solutions. And the small business said, well, that's not a need we have. He goes, what do you mean you don't have, you know, a treasury management needs? He goes, well, we don't have a treasury. It's like, well, no, you know, you're the banker knows what that word means, but the business doesn't necessarily.
Right. And it's those type of conversations that are keeping those small businesses on the retail product, right? They're underserved. To your point, right? The retail product isn't servicing their needs. It's not providing them the level of detail or controls that they need to have on a business or in a consumer product, but they see that the business banking products are too complex. They're modular, and it doesn't have to be that way. These businesses are performing, said, the same functions you and I are doing. They're paying a bill, they're paying a vendor in this case, or an employee, or collecting money. The functions of looking at my accounts, transferring funds from an account, looking at the transaction details of an account, doesn't have to be on an archaic solution. It can have the same wow factor as the consumer solutions have. I don't see that it has to be different. I think we can serve those small businesses with the more sophisticated capabilities, but in a user experience is just as simple as their own consumer internet banking is doing for them.
Now, build on this idea of getting off of the archaic. What have you chosen to upgrade architecturally that is going to make this so much better for the small businesses?
Well, and again, I admit it's taken me a bit to realize this, right? First couple of past lives, I guess, I was very product-centric, right? I built around Nacha, I built around Fedwire and EDI and so on. And then spent a good amount of time going out and training the bankers and businesses on how to do that. This time around, I took a completely different approach. And it was such a pleasure working with our designers and saying, listen, here are the functions our businesses need to conduct. Mind you, these were designers that were building award-winning designs for mobile banking for consumers. And it was such an exciting experience to go through and building out a solution that is, again, very intuitive, not changing the functionality that those individuals that are going to be conducting business banking capabilities or functions that are also using a consumer app. One of the key areas was truly creating a unified payments tool. So as a business, right, you know who you got to pay or collect money from. You know when you got to get it there, and you know the information that needs to accompany that payment or collection. How is that different than writing a check or a bill payment, right? That workflow of creating, sending a bill is starting with who I'm going to pay, when I'm going to get it there, writing out the amount, writing the date, signing it, and sending it. In my past lives, right, I built those modules, the Nacha Mile module, the Fedwire module. This time around, we unified that all. So a business is starting with whom I'm paying or a group of people that I'm paying or collecting money from. The module of ACH or wire, the method in which those funds go, is all done behind the scenes.
Yeah, no one woke up in the morning on the small business side and said, you know what I need is a nacho file. They might have woken up and said, I need nachos, but definitely did not say I need a nacho file.
Exactly. They're not going in the internet banking like, okay, I need to go to the nacho module or the wire module. And then rekeying in the same information in both of those modules for the same recipient. It didn't make sense. It's duplicate efforts from both a vendor standpoint, as well as from the user that's actually initiating that payment, and from the bank in setting up separate modules behind the scenes to administer that business.
So when we think about running a business, that just got me thinking about, one of the things that is a little bit different than the consumer side is I do have some other needs and I use separate systems, right, around my financial products, whether it's bookkeeping or payroll or, card processing, and I don't necessarily get all of those in one place. How have you approached that for the customer in their ability to manage some of that complexity?
That's a good question. I think we've got a number of opportunities, many of which we serve today. The business banking products, mine as well as many of our competitors, offer that integration to process ACH wire payments. But as we look in the future in cloud banking, I think we've got great opportunity to bring those payments into kind of a holistic view, right? As well as bringing in other fintechs to help facilitate that, whether it be, again, invoicing, EDI reporting, the payments that are being initiated, having that holistic view of those payments, that cash flow coming in and out, will provide a much richer view of their cash position in the future.
So you said it, so I can't let this pass. How are you thinking about partnering, with fintechs, and how has that played out? Partnership with fintech is the buzzword of 2019, but the reality of it, as we are in 2020, has been, less than completely fruitful. Right. Do you feel like that's changing? And what kept it from taking off in the first place?
Good idea. I think the architecture and technology hindered it. I think the parties involved haven't seen that greater value that it can bring. And yeah, we're exploring, I work for a company that offers a lot of those different fintech solutions. So we're looking at, merging the two together internally on that cloud, but also looking at vendors. Invoicing is a good example. From a business's standpoint, that's initiating an invoice, right, to your earlier point, is very separate than going online and managing the accounts. So there's a break there, right? In many digital banking solutions, there's no view of both in one environment. I think that's where the cloud's going to help us, right? If a business is initiating an invoice, they're doing that in one accounting application, but then going into digital banking to get access to their accounts, and then somehow coming up with what that true cash position is going to be, say, next week, based on the invoices that have been submitted. Bringing that into the cloud and having visibility to that, right, would help that business real time know what those outstanding receivables are in conjunction with the balances of the account that we're getting from the bank, will provide rich insight to what that outstanding receivables are and how that might affect the customer's balance.
When you say cloud, it almost sounds like it's happening on two levels simultaneously. It's cloud is both architecturally, where does the data sit? Is it on-prem or in the cloud? But it's also about an ecosystem in what you described, whether that is a ecosystem that's kind of private all within what you're doing, but I can see the ecosystem of my accounts and my cash position, all integrated and holistic for the first time.
That's right. And the customers. Yeah, I think it does. It provides a much more holistic view of the business's cash management position.
So if we started with almost a traditional view of cash management, kind of the inflows, outflows, and how much is left in between that I need to manage, what's the next set of problems you're looking to attack? Or what do you layer on top of that is, you've built a strong and differentiated base. How are you going to, keep it going for the customer?
I think it's providing the business data that they can leverage and be smarter. It's making them smarter. Integrating these solutions tighter is going to help. Bringing that data from those third-party fintechs combined with the data that's available on their cores. Yeah, I see it evolving and making sure that, especially in today's environment, right? The more information we can provide and predict, the better we're helping those businesses.
Yeah. And speaking of today's environment, you know, we've seen a shift with the ability to go into the branch and, you know, leverage the expertise of a banker has certainly been diminished. And, right. You know, let's face it, Ron Shevlin makes this point quite a bit. How often are we forcing customers to come into the branch because they can't do what they want to digitally? And so, you know, it's kind of a circular argument to say customers like going to the branch. Well, they only like going to the branch because it's the only way they can get their problem solved.
Right.
You know, what is that next layer of sets of things you can build that you say, you know, what does the future look like for SMBs? Are they going to become less dependent on branches, exception of cash, you know, aside piece of this, which that itself might be changing? What are the things, you know, that banks, as they view this new world skill set wise, what do they need to be thinking about in terms of the tools they have?
Yeah, I think, well, you're going to, like on consumer, right? You're going to have a mix of users. Some of the users are going to prefer to go into the branch. They like that relationship. They like that interaction. Businesses, obviously, to your point, right? There is a cash need and deposit need that's going to force them into the branches. Beyond that, being able to schedule an appointment with their business banker online, to be able to see their schedule, reach out to them online via chat, via video, is going to be, I think, an area where the financial institutions need to consider. Businesses have got to run a business, right? They've got a small amount of time to be able to conduct these banking functions. So yeah, why not enable them with the tools to be able to just to schedule an appointment like they would do anything else with their business, to go in, visit with a banker, not have to wait in line, and yeah, and just get that job done, right? Get that task done. Videos being another one, rather than going in, let's talk about what we can do online, you know, going circling back to, you know, fintech integration. You know, I think banks need to think about how they can better serve those businesses by anticipating the needs. So again, you know, like, you know, a rich data set of a holistic view of customers' cash position is not only going to help the business, but will also help the financial institution. So if they see that there is X number of invoices still unpaid, or payroll has been scheduled for the 15th, and the balance is, you know, lower than that, you know, it's an opportunity for the FI, the financial institution, to better serve the customer. Again, anticipating potential lending needs, or let's say there's excess cash, right? Giving them the tools to suggest through digital banking opportunities for that lending or even investment.
Yeah, and that really moves the role of the banker into something different that it typically is from the small business world today, which we talk about, oh, the customer relationship. Well, how often is that, you know, showing up, calling, asking how things are doing versus being able to proactively come to the customer and give them insights that help them run their business better? You know, they need different tool sets. What sorts of things, you know, when you think of that with either your ex-banker hat on or the things that are on your product roadmap, what kinds of tools do you want to build? You know, specifically, you mentioned being able to see excess cash or missing payments. Are there other areas like that that you're building?
Right. Lending is a good example, right? If you see that the cash position's looking pretty glim next week or the week after, you got outstanding invoices, right? Having an online tool to fulfill a loan, collect the loan applications based on that prediction, right?
Yeah. Pre-filling maybe, you know, a lot of the information you have already.
Exactly, right? Yeah, pre-filling the data with what they know about the business.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. The last loan application I filled out, I'm like, why am I writing my address in 5 different places? No, by the way, I'm an existing customer. How come you don't know my address? It's like,
exactly, right?
Unfortunately, the small things, you know, can still make such a big difference. Now, we brought up the cloud. You know, cloud also can make banks tremble a little bit in fear and can make some small businesses tremble in fear, right? One of the reasons some SMBs go into the branch also is they also feel like it's more secure to do it there versus doing it online. Have you been able to address security for either the financial institution or the small business?
Honestly, it hasn't come up. It's the same level, at least in my conversation, it's the same level of security that we have with internet banking. I mean, one, we're held to the same standards as the bank, right? It's not an empty cloud. It's not a cloud that's available to everybody. It's an environment in which is highly regulated, just like the financial institutions are.
Yeah, although I still know some that bankers that feel if they can see the server, it must be more secure than if, you know, it's in the mythical. Or a conversation I once had with a regulator and told her that we were using Amazon Web Services, and she looked at me with dismay. It's like, you mean the place I buy my shoes? Now, that perception, I think, has changed, you know, a good amount now.
Yeah.
I do want to finish. You know, one of the other things that comes up quite a bit, as much as fintech partnerships can be a buzzword, I think APIs were pre-partnership in terms of buzzworthiness. Are you seeing them actually beginning to bear fruit? Have we come through the hype curve, through the trough of disillusionment, into they're actually pulling out great functionality and pulling their own weight now?
I do. I mean, we've got a couple examples with Bill Pay and predictable marketing. We recently partnered with Ally to do real-time transfer for Bill Pay through those APIs. And with marketing, we've partnered with another vendor, Monado, to help consumer users to invest, I guess, a smarter way of investing their funds based on, again, predictions of their current account standings.
Who else is on the list of partnerships and that you think are key? Because you guys have done a good job there of building partnerships. You know, is that something that's going to continue to be core to your strategy, is partnering, not just building everything?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd mentioned it. We've got partners to explore, such as for invoicing, real-time ACH payments, wire payments, EDI reporting, again, more on the business side, you know, account reconciliation, check positive pay. So yeah, I think there's great opportunities, and we are in discussions with a couple of vendors to do just that.
So parting shots here, you are one of the more customer driven cores, both corporately, and you, one of the things I love in our discussions historically, when we could actually meet face to face, you really, in so many ways, function like a startup would be thinking about, you know, the customer driven. Where do you go for inspiration? Is there a blog that you like, or, you know, when you think of how banks should be getting smarter about being that partner and being customer driven, what should they be reading? Books, blogs, Breaking Banks obviously is on your list of things you listen to.
Absolutely. That's the first source. And that's the only source. That's the only source. You know, honestly, where I get my insights is really at the front line. So on a regular basis, at least once a quarter, I'm going to our banks, and then we collectively are going out to their businesses.
Going with them, like a joint call?
Oh, yeah. Much of the development of our solution derives from that one-to-one client interview. So I am sitting with a CPA, for example, that is bringing up our solution, and I'm watching them, you know, taking information from digital banking to that other accounting application and vice versa, and seeing, you know, where they go first in our solution to where they go next, and what are the key features or functions that they are using and why they're using it, right? And how that ties into the overall accounting function for that business. So for me, I do read a lot and obviously listen to your podcast a lot. But for me, I think I can bring greater value by having that face-to-face interview. And I commit to doing it at least once a quarter, if not more often than that.
Well, I think that is a great call to action for all of us to get out with customers more. I love that you're not just going to meet with the customer, but you're going to your customer's customer really understand that full chain. So thanks for taking time out today. And, you know, I'm guessing you have homeschooling, job as well as, you know, trying to keep the day job and lights on and rolling out product and now figuring out how do we empower a whole lot more of remote functionality for our banks in the future. So thank you, Michael Aubert. I guess last part, if people want to stay abreast of some of the work that Finastra is doing, where should they be finding out about the small business solutions you provide?
Oh, I mean, online. I mean, Finastra.com. I know Caitlin, who might be listening in, has done a great job of keeping our customers and the industry apprised of what we're doing through Twitter, through LinkedIn, Finastra.com, or reach out to me directly.
Oh, fantastic. Well, thanks for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag #BreakingBanks. Now, back to the program.
Here with Derek Sutton, the VP of Marketing at Autobucks, a startup that set out to fix business banking. But they do it by partnering with financial institutions rather than competing with them. A very different strategy from many fintech startups that were come about in the 2015 era. You know, 2010 was all about banking was dead. In fact, breaking banks was a popular theme with banking 2.0 from Brett and what we were doing with Perk Street in terms of disrupting and disaggregating banking. But here was Autobucks saying, hey, we're actually going to go partner with banks of all sizes to help them fix business banking. So, Derek, welcome to the show. But let's jump into, there's a whole lot, and it's very timely to talk about what's broken within business banking. What did Autobucks see back in the day that you said, hey, here's the problem we need to help go solve?
Yeah, thanks for having us on, Jason. So the biggest thing that we saw is what is the fact that it was hard to run and manage a business with inside the banking relationship. So fundamentally, banks have been really good about providing, you know, features and capabilities when it comes to what we call in our nomenclature, supply side and jobs to be done. So on the supply side, we're really good at providing features, you know, check a balance, recent transactions, move money, bill pay, right? We've built out all these complex needs around ACH management, wire, positive pay. But in doing that, what happened is we really lost the voice of the micro and small business. And so when you go back and kind of peel back the layers and kind of rewind time, you know, business used to be done with banks hand in hand inside of communities. And so businesses were building a dry cleaner. They were building contracting services. They were building a consultancy in a local community. Commerce naturally flowed through the financial institution. So you had to go to the financial institution to deposit funds, to request money. And then naturally you had conversations with the business bankers about what they see in the community and how business is being run. And you had this consultative kind of like hand-in-hand nature to business banking. Fast forward to digital banking, and now as things are, more and more things are done online, what we lost in that kind of that time frame there was really the relationship of managing and running a business in concert with the financial institution. And so there's features out there. I can go start my business account relationship with a financial institution. I can establish a lending relationship, but I can't really manage my business with the financial institution right now like you can with other fintech companies.
I'm glad you brought up the relationship, because when you talk to 99% of, you know, banks, even the large banks, they talk about the importance of relationship, which is especially, you know, important at times like this, which we'll get into here in a second. But there's something different between relationship between knowing you and shaking your hand and having a relationship in terms of knowing your name versus saying, hey, I know your business, I know your community, and that advisory side that is part of what they're missing today. So how does, when Autobook steps into this, how do you help a financial institution regain that advisory part of the relationship?
Yeah, great. You know, that's one of the things that comes up pretty often. And so how we help establish that is a lot to the data and just how they use the application itself. So now if you think about a small business owner, they can come in with their financial institution, literally run their day-to-day operations with Autobook on the back end. And what happens there is the data and the reporting, and because the application becomes so core to what they do day-to-day, really embedded in their day-to-day operations, the relationship comes out of that. So now instead of going to the financial institution in this request mode of, you know, just checking basic items, you're actually going to them to say, hey, you know, I have 14 customers that have day sales outstanding of 45 days. You can see here in the report, I'd like to get a line of credit based upon their repayment services. I've got my balance sheet with you. I've got my income statements with you. So like, I literally have everything I need from managing a business with you at the financial institution. How can we deepen this relationship so you can help me grow my business?
Well, has that been the gap as the business relationship has become digitized, as you said, that you no longer had that access to the data, right? Was it because the business owner was coming in with all of this paper documentation, putting it on the desk, and they previously had access and they don't anymore?
Yeah, I think there's some of that. I think there's also just the financial institution almost like asking or requiring the business to come on site to do business with them. So as everything shifted to digital banking and digital first, as an industry, we said, no, we're not going to prioritize that. You have to come into the branch. So that, I think that's one of the bigger things. It's the data side, but it's also being able to go in and self-enroll and literally manage your business online with a financial institution. If you look at the number of financial institutions that even offer digital account opening for business banking, you know, it's a very small percentage in the U.S.
Yeah.
And so...
How have banks been more successful when they do have access to this data? Because it's interesting to hear this dichotomy of now that they can see the full breadth again, where they used to require it in paper format, now they're seeing it in real time. It actually is becoming the central nervous system for the small business. How are the banks, you know, using that kind of access in new and powerful ways?
Yeah. So I think just for one, so we have a really good, you know, several success stories of small businesses using our platform, going with the financial institution and ultimately getting a loan to help grow their business. And a lot of that came out of the fact of what you just said, Jason, which was the data was centralized. And so now the banker's back in control to a bit of the conversation because they have everything at their fingertips. So instead of requiring or asking or requesting the business owner, hey, I need a financial statement. Can you go to your CPA or bookkeeper and bring this back? Or can you go to your third-party application, download these things? Or, you know, even, you know, we've heard stories of come into the financial institution. We'll sit down with you, bring all your logins. We'll help you put everything together. And so what maybe took hours to kind of like coalesce all these things from third-party disparate systems, grab also the receipts from the cab of your pickup truck, then pull these other things together. And now let's have a conversation. Instead, they're literally running their business with the financial institution hand in hand, and then granting access to the loan officer to say, hey, here's my report. Here's my customer aging, you know, report. Here's my outstanding payables. Here's my income statement. Here's my balance sheet. Now you can sit down and literally say, you've been running your business with our financial institution. Because you've done these things, we can open up this line of credit for you. Or on the other side of that, we've had conversations with loan officers that have said, you know, they've just had to look at businesses and say, you know, you don't have customers that pay you on time. You need to start to work on that part of your business, and then we can step in and help you with the growth needs.
Well, and I'm guessing a lot of the words you use, like aging and income statement, is not in the vernacular of a lot of these small businesses I forget who gave me this quote, but I loved it. It's like, no one started a business because they secretly wanted to be a CPA or a controller, right? And so why are we kind of forcing them into that function? You know, do you have any crazy stories that have come back from the banks, your customers, in terms of the things they've uncovered, you know, now that they actually have full insight into some of the customers they work with?
Yeah, I mean, so we actually purposely don't use those terms. So it's kind of funny. I talk about those terms when I'm in a podcast like this because everybody understands them. But with our business owners and their application, we purposely don't use that language. Funny stories, though. I think the funniest thing to me, it's not really funny, but it's just interesting. Every time we go talk to a financial institution, we literally say, you know, we kind of start talking about our product. And, you know, because of the name, we get related to QuickBooks a lot. And people come back and reflect to us and they say, well, how are you going to compete against them? They have everybody, right? That's just the natural thing that everybody says. QuickBooks has the whole business market. When you actually look at the numbers, though, they don't. And so the funny thing is, to me, Jason, is that the reality is that most businesses still run their business on pen and paper and spreadsheets more so than online.
Yeah, I would have guessed your biggest competitor is actually Excel.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, there's 30.7 million small businesses in the US. There's roughly 41 million independent workers, according to MBO partners. So consultants, freelancers, temp workers, on-call, et cetera. So combined 71 million, there's probably some overlap there. The number of QuickBooks Online users with their small business suite as well is like five to 6 million. So when you look at that number, 70 million, you know, QuickBooks Online then has about 5 to 6 million. You know, the number of people using online accounting applications is actually really, really low. And a lot of those users are actually bookkeepers and CPAs. So the number of businesses actually managing their business through those applications is very low. So as an industry, you know, really the opportunity is to say, okay, step in, once again, kind of step into that void. What is the modern way to help a business owner grow within either a physical community, a digital community, or bring those together? And really bring that relationship back to the financial institution.
Well, I know Audiobooks is a huge believer in pains, gains, jobs to be done.
Yeah.
When you get to the end user, not the bank as your customer, but the end user, you know, why aren't they adopting? You know, these are not, you know, almost everyone in the US now you can say has some level of digital savvy. Very high probability they're holding a smart device. You know, these are no dummies. This is not, you know, 1999, you know, what has kept them from adopting and why are you winning? What job are they hiring you to do that's different?
Yeah, a lot of it comes down to language and being there at the moment of need for the business owner. So like fundamentally, we've built products based upon RFPs and checklist of features for years and years and years. And we're carrying this legacy baggage. So if you think about digital banking, everything we've done, we try to digitize what was done in the branch and put it online, almost to a fault, right? And whenever the user looks at that and we start to name things online the same way we named them in the branch, speaking back to our team, it doesn't make sense to the end user. So when they're looking at your treasury management page as a financial institution, and you've listed off things like to your point earlier, Jason, we've talked about like just naming, you know, treasury management services, ACH processing, positive pay, you know, batch processing, those terms don't make any sense to a business owner. And so what we've lost is, whereas a business used to walk into a financial institution, used to have a conversation, there was empathy within that conversation. You could read face, you know, facial expressions, but you also talked in the same way. Now, if you look at your marketing website and how you talk about your products and how you relate those to a business owner, that language is not the same. We lost a lot of the language and the art there. And so one of the things that we do very specifically and purposely with our customers is that we help them with all their go-to-market. And so we use the insights that we've gained out of jobs to be done. We talk how a business owner talks about running and managing the business themselves, how they talk about their banking relationship themselves. And we use that to inform all of the copy that we write in our email digital marketing campaigns. We use that to inform the websites that we build. We use that to inform the product language that we have. We have an outbound calling team that calls, you know, business owners.
On behalf of the bank?
On behalf of the financial institution. But a lot of that is because, though, you have to step into that conversation and be very proactive in today's, you know, culture. and cut through the noise on behalf of a financial institution, rather than customers just coming at you in waves. You know, you have to show people that you have a solution to their problem, and it has to be worded in a way that makes sense to them.
Well, you know, I would say we were teasing out, you know, the relational piece of this. You know, part of what you're describing to me says it's also relatable, that yeah. It isn't about the relationship. It's actually, how do I relate your business needs to a product feature when those two things aren't necessarily translating
very well.
Yeah. Now, you brought up doing some of this on behalf of the financial institutions, which you guys have been very successful in your partnering effort, but you know, working with banks is no easy task. I'm curious, you know, what are some of the challenges you've faced in building those relationships? And on the flip side, you know, what has worked the best in terms of building that relationship?
Yeah, so it is a challenge. You know, banks and credit unions are both really great at times. You know, they're very partner friendly in many cases, and what, you know, they care about small businesses. So one, we're kind of stepping into that conversation from a point of like mutual empathy. But when it comes to marketing and the way that they talk to customers, that's not necessarily one of the things that they drive and do well, you know? And so what we try to do is we bring in best practices when it comes to digital marketing and how SaaS companies go to market. And we say, hey, financial institutions, you have these relationships with customers. You have, you know, trust built in. What we're going to do is we're going to come in and bring in insights related to small business and say, we're going to help you go really, really deep on understanding what makes a small business owner tick. We're also then going to go deep with, this is how a digital marketing company would go about the problem. And we're going to let that run inside of your organization. And if you will trust us to understanding the customer, if you'll trust us on having a conversation that matters, here's, you know, past emails we sent, here's call logs that you can listen to, here's referrals and references from customers. But if you let us go, we can show you adoption percentages, like empirical data that shows that we'll outperform you 7 to 8 times per year.
What kinds of data are you able to provide, you know, back to the financial institution around performance? Yeah. Are they getting a dashboard related to this?
Yeah, so we have an account management program, and that's one of the things that we do. So we show them deposit growth. We show them customer acquisition. We show them just percentage adoption. So our goal and our platform is our solution generates money for the financial institution. We not only raise deposits, we increase on interest fee income. Every time a business owner adopts AutoBooks, the bank gets paid. Every time a business owner gets paid, interchange is created and the bank gets paid. So we're mutually incentivized to grow adoption and growth. And so we actually show that to the financial institution. We say, if you come in and let us run what we call our playbook, then we're going to get you to 1% adoption in 30 days. And on average, we're going to get you to 5% adoption by the end of the year. And the program's going to start paying for itself. And if you let us go with all three legs of the stool, analyze your data, do the marketing automation, outbound calling, you're probably going to beat that in the first year. So the past, I think, 6 installs that we've done, we've gotten a 7.5% adoption within 1 year of their business base. Yeah.
And any pushback from the customers as it relates to this? Are they willing to give up that level of control, or is that?
It's a constant negotiation. You know, at the beginning of the conversation, there's obviously like, wow, those are really long emails and there's no pictures in there. How are those going to work? Or we wouldn't say things in that way. Or, you know, we would never call an outreach to our customers, right? We've been burned by that in the past. And so we have to just take them through each of those items and just kind of walk through it. And so the first ones were hard, man. Like, you know, kind of getting the financial institutions on board was hard. But now we have the data to go back to support and show, hey, the past 15 installs, you know, 10 of them have done it, 5 of them haven't. Here's the data. Right? Here's the performance. So if you want to be on this trajectory, then you're going to have to trust us and we're going to, you know, mutually, you know, partner on this. If you don't want to move into this mode and you want to control everything, then we probably need to look at a different pricing structure because our minimums need to be different because you're just not going to get the same level of adoption.
Now, given the level of end user intimacy you have as well, given the current state of affairs and the pressure, what do you worry about as it comes to that relationship between a small business and their bank or small businesses more broadly?
Yeah. So the thing that I worry about the most is the non-bank providers are really stepping into this chasm, and they are offering a service in the true moment of need of the customer when it comes to the receivable side and the cash flow side. I don't think financial institutions yet have that sense of urgency and are moving fast enough. So that's our biggest fear, right? So businesses coming out of COVID-19, you can look at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce reports, SBA reports, you know, cash flow is obviously of, you know, like on the tip of everybody's tongue. But the PPP loans and SBA loans, those are all in the past. You know, that's to cover past expenses. Businesses thrive, and you have to put them in a position on positive cash flow. You know, the average business owner, 27 days of cash reserve on hand. 25% of businesses have less than 13 days of cash reserve on hand. That's all prior to COVID-19. So as an industry, if we do not enable businesses to easily collect customer payments, digital, in-person, however that may be, whatever is best for that business, if we don't step into that void, that's my biggest fear in small business banking.
Yeah. If we don't fix the receivables side of things, the lending side almost becomes a moot point. There's a trickle down as the gears begin to grind.
What's the point? So we're going to go give all these loans out. How are they going to repay those loans? If we haven't enabled them to transact as a business online, then how are they going to essentially fast forward in time and be able to satisfy those loans and build a healthy business?
Now, you're playing in an interesting place with, you know, a team that's had to go remote, being Michigan-based, you know, one of the first to be locked down. How has the pandemic played out for you? Because you're dealing with banks that are stressed, who are dealing with business banking customers who are stressed, and teams that are displaced with, I could hear a child in the background, I think, over there, yeah, and I can kind of hear mine pounding on the studio, air quote, studio door, also known as the home office. You know, how has Autobooks been able to weather the storm so far?
It's been a challenge. So we were, as a culture, I work remotely. We have probably 15% of our team is full-time remote, and then the remaining 85% is all in person. And so whenever we first made this shift, it was a bit of a challenge. You know, we're nimble enough and young enough as a company. All of our tools are digitally enabled. You know, everything's in the cloud. So, you know, from an infrastructure and tooling perspective, what a big deal. But culturally, how we met, how we did things was different for a lot of people. So that took us probably a week or so to kind of get our feet underneath this. But then the true impact of the pandemic hit from an empathy standpoint, and we saw all the business owners and the waves of their needs come in. And so here's what our team did. I love this. Our team decided to offer 24/7 support at the onset of COVID-19. So as we were having to shift to work from home, dealing with, you know, managing your kids' schooling, maybe, you know, a husband and a wife both working from home, trying to figure all that out. We went on 24/7 because businesses needed to onboard into remote payments at all hours of the day. They were trying to shift their businesses from offline to online. They themselves were stressed, and it may be 2 a.m. before they get to it. And so some of the great stories that we have is, we had a little furniture store in North Carolina, and she was with one of our banking partners. She'd been getting all the information from Autobooks over the years, but it didn't relate to her at that time. So kind of going back to our relatable side.
The timeliness piece of it.
Timeliness too. Her demand side didn't, or her point in the timeline didn't match up to what we were offering at the time, right? So now all of a sudden her compelling event was social distancing. People can't come on site. I'm not going to be an Amazon reseller. I'm not going to go on eBay. I have a small kind of craft store inside of a craft mall. How do I go and still, you know, like maintain my income? So she signed up for Autobooks. We generate, you know, they can either send a digital invoice or share an electronic payment form and get paid online. She signed up for that. But the important thing was she started taking pictures of all of her items and putting them on Facebook. So she would take a picture, put a price, put it on Facebook. Somebody would comment. She would share her payment form link, get paid, and the money would go right into her account. I could share out the Facebook page. It's Reclamation Furniture. You can go to her page now. She's now evolved it. She calls it her online catalog. She started a Facebook group page. It's all of her pictures, all of the price tags. She calls it her online catalog. We see the number of transactions and the amount flowing through. She's doing more business now than she was before the pandemic. And she was a business that never would have shifted to digital had this not happened. So kind of going back to your, you know, how has this impacted us? Those stories just keep us going, you know? So like the work from home stuff, just plowing through, you know, the 24/7 onboarding of businesses for a time period. It was just that kind of held on and kind of pushed the team through. But now it's just smooth sailing with working from home.
Fantastic. So last question, what is your personal ritual for staying sane in the midst of all of this chaos?
Walks or runs. So I, kind of get up, try to get my day started early before the family gets up. And then I just have some personal time. Kids wake up and I, kind of do that. And then when you're at home, it's kind of like that hybrid of like you're home and the family's there, but you're working. And so for me, you know, just sitting down, being in front of a computer screen, probably 2 to 3 times a day, I walk the block, you know, just to like break it up and get out in nature and like get away from the screen. And then 3 days a week, I run a problem is what I call it. So basically like the biggest thing I'm wrestling with at the time, I go on a run and that's all I focus on. No podcast, no nothing. Come back and then whiteboard whatever I thought about.
I love that idea of running a problem. One of the banks I was talking to last week said there were multiple days when he looked on his fitness tracker that he had logged over 10 miles because the only quiet place you could find was walking outside.
Yeah. So I'm lucky enough that I'm in the Dallas area. The weather has been beautiful. So being outside has been a respite for us.
One of the interesting features that you launched, and I'm curious if this had to have been in works before the pandemic and it just, was prescient that it happened right now, but the get paid with audiobooks. Could you explain how that works? I think that's interesting as it comes to an acquisition model and ability to serve both end users and the banks or the financial institutions simultaneously.
Yeah. So, related to the side of like our biggest fear is banks being able to move fast enough, right? And so we saw the need being generated by business owners because our adoption started to go through the roof, quite frankly, during this pandemic. So it's kind of bad on the countryside. It was really good for our business. We had a lot of financial institutions coming in saying, hey, we'd like to just implement as fast as we can. But the reality is that just takes time in our industry. You know, contract negotiations, implementation queues, and getting the direct integration done just takes time. So we quickly spun up a way that businesses can now go directly to audiobooks. So it's, audiobooks.co /get paid is the informational site, but a business owner can come right to audiobooks. They can enroll directly with us. But what we do for the financial institution is we still want to partner with financial institutions. We're not abandoning our business model. We want to deeply integrate. So what we do is when the business owner enrolls, they have to enroll with a digital credential. So whatever financial institution they use coming in, we lock in an account with that financial institution for the deposit. They can't switch it. They can't transfer funds out of it. We don't have our own depository tools, so we're not looking to gain interest on it. We're not going to recommend our own lending products and debit cards and things like that. But the sole goal is, hey, financial institution, if a business owner says, I need to get paid online, can you help? How do you answer that today? All too often, and we've done the secret shopping, we call into financial institutions and they say, one, we don't have a solution, or two, have you tried PayPal? Have you tried Square? Have you tried QuickBooks? And basically given the business owner over to their competitors. So with this initiative, Jason, all we're saying is when a business owner calls in and says, I need to get paid online, can you help? Just simply say, yeah, get paid with audiobooks. And just know that when they get paid with audiobooks, we're going to lock that deposit into your financial institution. As we see growth and adoption in your base, we're going to come back to you and say, you know what? You have a group of customers in hand right now. We'd love to integrate our solution inside your digital banking ecosystem. You will immediately pick up the non-interest fee income, the deposit growth, and any interchange revenue from this customer base as well. So they're already like baked in and ready for you. We just want to move fast on your behalf. So just download our marketing content, share it with your customers, invite your customer service team to our webinars. We're going to train you up. Operationally, we talked about work from home. Banks are stressed. Hey, we'll take on all the burden for you. Just go along for the ride with us, participate. Let's get business owners paid online and let's keep the relationship with you, the financial institution.
Well, I have not seen such a successful application of product-led growth applied to enterprise sales before, but that's very much how it feels in terms of, let them feel the utility and expand it over time without that long-term commitment.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. That's one of the things we've talked about. We'd love your feedback on that, but that is the interesting thing, right? As fintech, we've always, it's either been one side or the other. we've always either just like totally integrated or, you know, kind of set outside. So I think it's going to be an interesting use case. We're pretty bullish on it. We've had great feedback so far. So hopefully all goes well.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us today, Derek Sutton of Autobooks, and it's autobooks.co, not .com. And you go to their site, check out the Get Paid with Autobooks feature, as well as a host of ways they can turn your small business line of business into a very profitable part of the bank or financial institution, especially at a time when those customers need us the most. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
That's it for this week. Thanks to our guests and to our sponsors who help make the show possible. You may have a little more time on your hands right now, so you can listen to all of our more than 300 shows, plus episodes from all of our other shows, including Breaking Banks Europe, Tech on Reg, the Finovate podcast, and more, all on Provoke.fm. I hope you like them, and if so, that you'll give all the shows 5 stars and share them with others. Stay home if you can. Take care of your loved ones, and let's all work together to move this industry forward and to make it stronger than ever. That's it for this week. We'll see you again next week with more Breaking Banks.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.